revving up for Lean Braise. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on to your carrots, comrades. We're going to burn some high-performance health rubber. You're about to enter the Lean Braise Throwdown Zone, accelerating for the simple solutions. We are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Braise Radio Show at theleanbraise.com. Ready on roots rock. Ready on roots rock. Ready on roots rock. Ready to rock you tonight. I know you got a big old rocket in you. Welcome, Braise. I'm Ron Jones. I'm on location in Tucson, Arizona with Janet and Carrie Swenson and Marley Bisbee. And we just had a stellar hike yesterday at Finger Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so Janet is 75 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. And Carrie was the youngster in the group at 49. She'll be 50. And I'm 51. Marley is
56.
Yeah. So was an invigorating hike. And we just wanted to talk a little bit today about how you're able to do that at 75 and what happened in your life leading up to the point where you can still be that active?
Well, as I said before, I was fortunate growing up. We didn't have television, so we had to be outside roller skating and hiking and riding our bikes and swimming. And that just kind of went over into my adult life because I married a man who liked to do the same kinds of things. And, you know, you just, if you stop, you solidify a little bit, so you just have to keep moving no matter whether it's hiking or walking or biking or just going to the gym. But it's important to keep moving.
One of the things that I chatted a little bit about yesterday with Carrie and some of you all is that a lot of people today don't, they haven't grown up with the tools that need to be physically active. So they don't know what it's like to stay in the game. And one thing I've gathered from talking to the people that are active at 50, 60 plus this weekend is that they've been really, really consistent. So anything we can say today to help people learn how to be consistent and stay in there and not give up, it'd be great.
Well, I really think that there's a tendency to reinvent yourself. I've certainly seen this in my activities. We talked about this a little bit, I think, when you did some of the other interviews this weekend. Neither you nor I race bicycles as much as we did or with any kind of intensity anymore, but we've gone on to other things and different things. And I think that that's one of the secrets for me. I mean, I've been active since I was a kid. I was a competitive swimmer, and then I cycled for 30 years, some of that racing. But what happens is I get really tired of not being able to really do anything, so I reinvent, start something new. I've never hiked before. This was something new for me to consider, well, maybe I'll hike now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the thing that people miss if they haven't had it all their life. They don't know how to redirect and do something different.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the secrets that has been for me.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'll go along with that because as you get a little bit older, you know, I used to run, and then I had an Achilles tendonitis, and it said, no, you're not going to run anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started biking with my friends, and my children had already drug us into cross-country skiing. And when they finally left and went on to their education, I really didn't want to give that up. So I thought, well, why not start a Nordic ski patrol, a national ski patrol,
wow,
a cross-country ski patrol. And that was great because the people who came and wanted to be tested and be a patrol member, they were all younger.
What age did you start that?
Let's see. That was in 79, uh-huh. So a while ago.
Uh-huh.
But most of the people that joined the group were really super cross-country skiers, and we had some avalanche people who would go in and set off the charges before we could go in. And so I did that for a change, and then you know, when I got too old, my husband said to me at 2 o'clock in the morning, no, you're not going out at minus 30.
Yeah, so, you're in Montana, so
yes,
it's not California.
Right.
Yeah.
And the depressing part of being, the patrol was always very up and very hyper and lots
sure.
of fun, but doing those kinds of rescues was, we never came up with a live victim.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. You were always digging.
It's hard.
Mm. Yeah. And that was the depressing part. So
yeah.
When finally we dissolved the patrol, then what was I going to do? Well, you know, then I got in with a group called the BWAGS, which is the Bozeman Women's Activity Group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice because one of the things that they did, we had women who had never hiked, who had never really done much walking, but a friend would drag them along.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke it into three groups so that there was one group that just did easy walks and looked at the wildflowers and stayed out for a short period of time. And a lot of those people then moved up to the intermediate group, which hiked some trails. And then the third group were the bushwhackers.
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
And it was wonderful because these people managed to keep their friendship. And as you, Marley knows and Carrie knows, we women all need other women to visit with and keep us moving along.
That's a great tip. Women are more social that way, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that group still around? Or?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
You know, and
cool.
The unfortunate part is some of them who are my age are suffering, you know, bad backs, arthritis, different things that they can't get out and do any of the hiking or skiing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them come to the gym and they get on the recliner stationary bikes.
Right.
You know, or do something. But the majority of them have stayed active in some way.
At some level.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably came out of that experience.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But it was fun. The last time I hiked with some of them, let's see, one had a brace on a knee and an ankle and
mm-hmm.
a cane. One of them had braces on both knees and two canes.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was a joke the whole way up and the whole way down.
Yeah.
But they hung in there.
So the hike yesterday, we should probably talk about that a little bit. I get this wild email from Marley, like, hey, man, we've been talking about doing this hike called Finger Rock. You should come over. And you're always evasive about how long it was. I kept asking, well, how long is it, you know?
Well, we didn't really know. I mean, it just sort of, I'll give a little background history here. I got introduced to Janet in January through a mutual friend. And her desire was to do Finger Rock before she went back to Montana. She's here for winters in
mm-hmm.
Tucson. And I had never really hiked enough to do something like that. So I said, yeah, let's do it. I'd like to do it too. And we hiked every weekend from that time until yesterday when we actually did the entire Finger Rock up to the finger, you know, projection.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was 9 hours. We had fun.
And we I don't know if we did this on purpose or not, but we never looked it up or found out where it went or how far it was. It's right there in town. I mean, it's famous. A lot of people have done it. But we would stop people on the trail, and we'd ask them all the time, well, have you done Finger Rock? And how did you find it? And it's really relative. It's gonna people's experiences depend on, you know, their experience and how old they are. And
yeah.
So some people said, oh, I hated it. It was horrible. Oh, my husband fell and he was injured. And other people said, oh, you're doing Romero today? You'll have to be fine on Finger Rock. And we did hike kind of up to the landing area.
Right, which is basically like equivalent to the base of the Finger Rock. Right?
Yeah, and we had no clue what came after that, which made everything we'd done before that look really easy. And finally, we looked it up. We actually figured out that it was not on an established trail, that last
mm-hmm.
part
right.
that we'd never done. And we did find out it was a lot shorter. I think we fooled ourselves into thinking, oh, well, we thought it was 14 miles round trip, and it's only 6.7 piece of cake.
Straight up.
Yeah.
5,000 feet of gain. And,
yeah. Quite a bit.
In 3 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't count the up and down part. Just total.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a hard hike.
It was difficult.
It was a hard hike, and much to Janet's credit, she just had the pace the whole time. And
well, Marley set the pace, and I've always had her do that because it's perfect. She never goes too fast. She never slows down. It's
mm-hmm.
just this steady pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I have vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And going up this canyon, there are places where, you know, it's very narrow.
Yeah.
And so just watching her feet and staying behind her, I managed to not fall into the canyon.
That's good.
Yeah. But I think it was wonderful that
we're thankful for that.
We fooled ourselves because when a week ago when we got to the landing, and that's where the helicopter comes in to pick you up if you can't get down. And we looked down and we could see these two young men who were going to technically climb. And, you know, it only took them 35 minutes to go down and kind of disappear from our side up the other side. And it looked easy. You know, piece of cake. We can do this in 45 minutes. Well, it was an hour and 15 maybe.
Climbing straight up a scree field.
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
trying to avoid cactus up my butt, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you couldn't always
avoid
that.
Yeah. That this was different than hiking California. I'm not used to the projectiles, you know, from all the cacti. It was Jim and I were having this conversation. You know, you got to be really careful what you reach out and grab here in Tucson when you're hiking.
Yeah. And sometimes the place that you really want to reach out and grab something, you know, you can't.
Right. Now, this is a really, I think, a good Avenger of Health, like inspire people to be active tip, is that you guys said that you'll always hike at a level where you can chit-chat on the way up.
The whole time.
So you pace yourself. And you had a great suggestion for Susie hiking with us yesterday, who did a great job.
Yeah,
she's
awesome.
56, I think. You told her, find a pace that you can hike forever at.
Yeah.
And get that rhythm. Basically, and you're in that flow state, right?
Yep.
High efficiency and not overextending, and but you're still moving.
I said that to her because she had no clue, and of course, neither did Janet or I, because we'd never been to the top. But she really had no clue what this trail looked like, what the hike looked like, how. When you say 6.7 miles. That can be really simple if you're walking on a flat.
Right.
And she looked like she was really kind of having her nose to the grindstone when we were only halfway to the landing. And that's when I told her that. I said, you know, just set a pace you could go forever if you don't know how far it is you have to go. And that way you can keep going.
I think that was soothing to her.
Yeah,
she's like,
I hope
and
so.
I think that can make people feel like it's okay. Hey, it's okay. And then if you keep in that zone and that pace, then she eventually did make it up to the top. Had she overextended on the bottom and got nervous about it, she might have not made it that far.
And also, if you don't know, you might put out a little too much effort reaching the first half of the hike, and you still have to make it back down.
Right.
But I think she did a stellar job and was really as much an inspiration almost.
She brought as much to the table as anyone.
Yes, she did.
What's cool about hiking, and I'm sure other physical activities too, is that when you work for something like that and you earn it with sweat, it is such a transformational thing. I've watched this with my corporate clients. It basically started from ground zero. And then they ended up going to the top of Yosemite Falls or something like that, and that just really changes them. It's not something they can just buy. You know, there's like a temporary satisfaction out of something like that. So I think we saw that with Susie a lot yesterday.
I think it opened a whole world of possibilities for her in her mind.
I think it'll it'll change her. There's a shift. As one of my, I've got a friend that's a life coach. She talks about shifts a lot. Did the person get a shift, you know?
I think we all got shifted yesterday.
Yeah. As I'm following these women that are kicking my butt and I'm yelling, what the hell did you get me into, Marlee?
And all she could say is, I don't know, because we had no idea what we were doing. And I thought we were kind of fortunate to have Carrie with us, other than the fact that she's my daughter and I'm very honored that she came to do this hike with us.
Yeah, it was fun.
But, you know, ever since she was small, she had a good sense of direction, and she would always look and see, you know, little places along the trail that you should or should not go. And so yesterday, a couple of times, we'd have been in deep doo-doo in some of that cactus if Carrie hadn't said, no, I think you're supposed to go left. So we had a good time.
She saved us a few times.
Yeah.
So that was an extra perk, because originally I was coming to hike with Janet, and then it ended up I met all these people yesterday, and then Carrie showed up, and Carrie, you'll be 50 this year.
Yeah.
So it was obvious when you walked in the parking lot that, you know, you're still in pretty good shape.
Oh, I don't know. I thought everybody did wonderfully yesterday.
Yeah.
And I always say, even to my clients, I'm a veterinarian, I say to them, age is not a disease.
Uh-huh.
With their older patients, with their older pets, I say, yes, he's 12, but look at how good he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say age is not a disease as far as, you know, diagnosing illnesses or treating illnesses, and I think it's the same with people.
Mm-hmm.
People start thinking, oh, I'm over 50, I can't do anything, or I'm over 60 or 70 or whatever. So I think we just have to keep in our minds that we can do whatever we want to.
Mm-hmm. So and Marlene, I've had this conversation over the years, but you used to be a very elite biathlete. And for people that don't know, it's a cross-country skiing and a shooting with a certain type of rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty, from what I've heard, pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that compete at a high level, when they're done with the competition part of their life, they're just completely out of control with their diet. They don't even do anything anymore. But you've maintained physical fitness your whole life. I think part of that might be that, you know, that's the way your parents were. You
mm-hmm.
were talking about that yesterday. So how have you stayed in the game? Because that's one thing that I'm going to take home and talk to people about is all these people I met, they never got out of the game. They're always playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you manage to do that over the years?
Well, I do attribute a lot of it to my parents and
mm-hmm.
the way we were raised because
mm-hmm.
for me it's a lifestyle. So actually, I feel kind of guilty if I don't work out.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I did not do that.
Yes. And for me, working out is my stress reliever.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go out for a hike or a run or a ski or a snowshoe, it releases me from my work stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, when I went to veterinary school, even though I was retired from competition, I still had to get out every day because
mm-hmm.
that's what I knew and
mm-hmm.
that's what was comfortable for me
mm-hmm.
and that's what got me through my really stressful times at veterinary school and then now as a profession.
Mm-hmm.
So I've slowed down a little bit with what I do, but I still try to get out at least 3 or 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't run, I don't race. Everyone's like, oh, aren't you going to race? I said, no, racing days are way behind me,
mm-hmm.
but I still like to stay in shape for me.
Right.
So I just keep trying new things and doing different things, and also it helps having 2 very active Labradors at home.
You know, I tell
need their walks.
In corporate wellness, I tell people that all the time. That do you have a dog? Yeah. Well, they make great exercise partners because
they
usually
do.
Will go and they like it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't complain, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you also do a lot of horseback riding, and you said that's the type of riding you do is really physical.
I do. I have 2 Tennessee Walkers, and I go out with groups of my age, or actually most people I ride with are older, into their 60s, 70s, and even 80s.
Hmm.
And there's an amazing group of people that stay fit by riding because of the riding that we do. We don't just sit and plod on our horses. We
mm-hmm.
have gated horses so that we're moving along at a pretty good clip, and we have to really balance on our horses and use our core strength and our leg muscles to ride well.
Hmm.
And so I get off a horse feeling like I did a long day's work, and it really keeps me fit during the summer.
It's not the circus pony ride.
Yeah. It's not plodding along.
No.
Yeah.
And I can't ride with her because my mother always said I looked like a sack of potatoes on a horse.
So you don't ride at all?
No.
Okay. Have you ever?
With Carrie, when she had her first horse.
A little bit?
Was pretty young. We rode double because we had a sweet horse, but she had some little idiosyncrasies. Like she didn't like water. She'd jump across if she could.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd shy at White Rocks. So after that, after she went off on her own with her horses, no, I quit riding.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So as you've gotten older, some of your friends have stayed in, some of, you know, have not. I've noticed that as I've gotten older, I've had to kind of get younger friends to play with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, the thing that is hard is that part of this is your genes, your genetics.
Right.
You know? And a lot of my friends who no longer do very much is because they are in such pain.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't really learned other ways of dealing with it other than possibly medications.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes things worse for them. And sometimes they just feel like, well, all of a sudden I'm 70 or 75 and I'm old.
Mm-hmm.
And they choose. It's almost as if they choose to act like an old person.
Now you had a great story yesterday about someone
mm-hmm.
that you had talked to,
mm-hmm.
and you had this kind of frank
mm-hmm.
a conversation with him in a caring way.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this crossroads moment
yes.
where there's a little bit of irritation, but they had a shift.
Yes, this person did have a shift going from walking with their shoulders hunched over and watching their feet and kind of shuffling.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we had this little talk about, you know, look up, enjoy the scenery, mm-hmm. you know, square your shoulders. You're not old. Mm-hmm. Don't choose to act like an old person.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little irritation there, but mm-hmm. it turned out great.
Mm-hmm.
And that person hopefully will do some interesting walks this summer.
A lot of it is the attitude, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, I was talking to my wife, Candace, who also turns 50 this year, and I was telling her, gosh, all these people I've met that are, you know, 65 plus, they're so young mentally, you know, physically, they're very fit too, but there's a sharpness to them I've noticed that they're not dull. They're engaging and they're dynamic and very youthful. But, you know, if you think of just the physiology of that, you've got the oxygen into your brain and the endorphins, you know, flying through, and it is very healthy for people to be mm-hmm. physically active.
Well, and I just went to a seminar for senior pets, and they recommend a 15-minute walk twice a day for senior dogs because it helps with their brain function.
Oh, great.
Helps with their oxygen uptake. And so I'm like, yay, this is exciting. We can say to people, before for your senior pet and for you,
mm-hmm.
we can kind of combine it together. So I think it's very important for exercise for everybody.
I was laughing with Carrie yesterday because she uses the pet fitness. She's a wellness person, right? So she uses the pet fitness as a way to, like, try to hopefully get her clients into
get in there.
Moving as well with the dog.
Yeah.
But we were having a conversation yesterday about the obesity of the animals today,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm. And it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've heard a little bit about that in the news. They're probably eating all the same food that the people are eating, right?
Well, and a lot of people, well, their pets are more of a family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they treat them as such, and they spoil them a little more than mm-hmm. they should with mm-hmm. table scraps or too many treats and mm-hmm. thinking they're doing the right thing, but then they get overweight and then they have, just like with people, they have diabetes, they have orthopedic problems, and they get lazy and don't want to exercise.
And, you know, people do that with their kids, too. Mm-hmm. There's the food reward thing.
Yes.
But it's so destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about child obesity yesterday as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was my feet are a little sore today. But other than that, I feel pretty. I started whining about my feet, and I realized I had to go hike alone for a while. These women were not going to tolerate any whining.
Well, you know, I think it's very difficult for families right now, sometimes depending on how they were raised, but mm-hmm. many families have both parents working.
Right.
And the thought of stressing out at work and coming home and fixing a meal and dealing with your children and their homework
mm-hmm.
seems to take a great deal out of some families because it's easier to stop at some fast food place and bring home fast food and gobble it down. And it really hit home to me that this is happening to people when a couple of years ago they started having seminars and books written about how to have a family dinner together.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Shocking.
And, yeah, I couldn't believe it. It just didn't.
So you raised your children with a center of family
mm-hmm.
eating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
breakfast.
I was raised that way too.
Yeah, yeah. And dinner was always a good time, even though, you know, it might be early or late depending on the kids' skiing schedules. But it was our family time to share what had happened during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people don't do that anymore.
They don't,
because
yeah.
they're so busy, and sometimes it's hectic because they have their children in different kinds of sports or camps, and they just grab something and run.
There are people in the wellness business that are saying that one of the most important ways to get America healthy again is to start with a family meal.
I think so.
At dinner, mm-hmm. yeah. just sitting down. And plus, you know, you're probably going to make food much healthier than you're going to buy
mm-hmm.
in a restaurant.
Well,
but there's a social aspect to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, a lot of my clients are in corporate wellness. They're so busy, they're flying through the drive-thru at 10 o'clock at night after soccer practice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not once in a while, it's like
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And so there's a, like the central nervous system is kind of fried at some level, which we get into, like that. That's why it's so important to get out and do things like hiking. Have you guys heard of ecotherapy?
No.
You've been living it your whole life, but there's some really interesting research out there now that compare, you can take the same metabolic output, let's say you're on a treadmill in a gym, and do the same metabolic output outside, and then they measure the psychological mood evaluation enhancement, and you're in such a better mood and psychological place being outside versus inside. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of benefit to getting out and going for a walk or going for a very long hike up to Finger Rock.
And again, when you look at some of these older people who have problems and they can't do anything but go to a gym.
They're inside. Yeah.
And so one hopes that they get some good benefit from that. But I don't know. I find it boring, actually, to go to the gym. If I don't have a book I can read while I'm at the gym, I can't go.
Let's talk.
That doesn't mean I'm lifting weights anymore.
Right. Let's talk. You know, I've done a lot of work with seniors, too. And the number one cause for injury and death for seniors is something related to falling. And so what I've tried to tell people over the course of my career, that balance training is fall prevention. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with Jim yesterday hiking up as we're stepping over all these obstacles, right, and sliding down the scree. And this is a science-based statement. If people did more things like this, our nervous systems would function better and they would fall less. And what I'm starting to see at the corporate level is that people sit so much, they hardly walk, and when they do, they trip and fall, even if it's flat on concrete. And there's a cone there marking this and a sign there marking that. I think it's so important for healthy aging for people to get out on a trail and do things like this in a natural environment. Yes, there's all kinds of mood enhancement things going on too, but just from a biomechanical or neurological standpoint, that was pretty technical stuff yesterday.
Well, it was.
And we all did really well with it.
I think so.
Yeah.
And Marley has been so good with me because she knows that I can't look up and down very quickly because of the vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of fun yesterday. She'd extend a hand and Carrie'd give me a push from the back in on the places where we were really worried that Grandma may end up down in the canyon.
You did well.
On that particular terrain, I was really glad that Carrie had your back.
Yeah, I was too.
I had the front, and then Carrie had your back, and then Carrie also pointed out a couple of times when I was drifting off the trail. So that was good, because I tend to just sort of be concentrated on what's in front of me in terms of the foot placement when the terrain is pretty testy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, in fact, miss a few of the forks of going to the right direction.
Right.
But I wanted to point out to the people that are listening to this, the part of the trail that Janet and I had not done was not an official trail. And it was where multiple people had scrambled up a really steep kind of scree field of rocks and cactus, making lots and lots of different trails. And we literally followed a cairn pathway where people would leave little piles of rocks so you could tell what direction the path went. And we sort of knew that it wasn't an official trail, but we had no idea that it was going to be exactly like it was. And going up was difficult in itself, but I couldn't help but be at the top thinking, that's going to be really challenging going back down that part.
And it wasn't bad, though, coming down, did you think?
No, and I think it was primarily because we sort of had that little group going where everyone was looking out for everyone else and taking care that people made the trail, taking care that if someone was slipping that, you know, they didn't get hurt, and we made it up and made it down.
Good teamwork yesterday.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah. And I think that's important, and I think that comes through with what Janet was talking about, organizing things in your community where people can come and participate, and then that tends to become the trend, and it lasts for years and years and benefits so many people into later age.
When I started doing corporate wellness, I had this wild idea to start hiking with people, and it seemed kind of crazy at the time, but it kind of grew, And I saw these shifts and transformations in people, and then they brought their spouses and their kids, and then they started hiking on their own with their own groups, and I didn't have to organize all the hikes anymore. I still do the major hikes for my clients, but they are doing it on their own, and they've become the hike leader, and they've got their friends and family members, and they're doing all this stuff. So I just really like hiking. I think it's really accessible for people. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get into. You don't need a whole lot of super technical training to get started.
Well, in Montana, you know, we have very short, warm weather.
I've heard about that. Yeah. One of my best friends is from Montana.
There we go.
Yeah.
But one of the things that people who have accomplished what you just talked about, they kind of get into the cross-country skiing, or if they don't like coming down and burying themselves in the snow, they start snowshoeing.
I love snowshoeing, yeah.
Yeah, and it's good exercise, and little kids can do it. The whole family can do it together. With sometimes, you know, you have somebody like me that has a little bit of a chicken that doesn't want to go down a steep hill on skis. Would rather do it on a pair of snowshoes, and so that gets them out there.
This is something that might inspire folks. My parents, my dad's 71, my mom's 69. They went to Yosemite in January. And they'd heard me talk about the snowshoes, so I've never taken them out on the shoes, but they borrow the shoes and the poles. And so they had no training, right? I said, well, this is what it's going to feel like, and this is how to get them on. And they went up there and shoot all over the place. And Dad tipped over once, and they got a funny picture of it. But it's snow, so it wasn't a big deal. But they really enjoyed it, and the photos they took, and it's just really fun to see them, you know, at 70, being active and doing things. And they've said the same thing. Gosh, our friends, like, they're in walkers or scooters. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to make a proactive decision to take control of your own health. That's something Marlene and I talked about before you guys got here. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can comment on that a little bit. But it's just people have kind of given up that part of their life to someone else somewhere.
Yeah, well, the conversation we had was kind of specific, but in general, I think that people, you know, it's the lean beret. It's no excuses.
That's right. That's why we're all here the same.
That tends to be the biggest excuse, that you just simply haven't taken responsibility for your own health and welfare. Mm-hmm. Because no one, in reality, no one can do it for you. No doctors, no nurses, no gurus, no yogis, no. Mm-hmm. It's only going to be you, and you're the one that has to be out there as your own health advocate, figuring out what are the solutions to your problems. And as I said, if earlier in your life you've reinvented yourself simply because you want to do something different, it's far easier in later life than to reinvent yourself because you have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because suddenly you have health restrictions or physical restrictions. And a person who's proactive with what's going on as they age and makes those transitions and changes and reinventions mm-hmm. along the way is a person who continues to be active.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to try, as a wellness coach like you are, Ron, to instill that kind of knowledge in someone. That bottom line, no one's going to do it for you. No one's going to go out and do the hike. No one's going to go out and exercise. No one's even going to take that allergy medication that you probably should take so you can do all those things. Mm-hmm. It comes up to you. And then you throw in a culture where everybody's too busy to even eat good food, mm-hmm. much less get anything else accomplished or have dinner with your family.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a problem. It's an epidemic problem in people's frame of minds.
Yeah. And our thing is, we just want people to do something 30 minutes a day.
Yeah. So
it's very Jack LaLanne-like, right?
You have to start simple. It's like you say, you know. And I think it's perfect that you tell people, just do something for 30 minutes every day for 30 days, no excuses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of people on Lean Beret's website who'll do that, mm-hmm. and then they won't stop. They'll keep going.
Yeah.
Because they suddenly realize they could do it. They're inspired that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they continue to do it and see what else it is they can do. And in terms of the hiking, I want to say this.
Mm-hmm.
Janet always makes it sound like I'm some kind of person that made it possible for her to go and do Finger Rock Hike. And I was not a hiker before this ever. I maybe did, you know, a couple hour day hikes and really didn't care about it and didn't really like it that much because there were other things I'd like to do better.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to take this opportunity to say that if it wasn't for Janet,
mm-hmm.
I would not be a hiker today, mm-hmm. nor would I have ever attempted to do anything like Finger Rock. So we have the mutual admiration society going here.
One of my yoga friends talks about beginning again and again. Life is just a series of mm-hmm. doing that over and over and over. And that, I think that has resonated this weekend with all the people I've been around. They're constantly just dealing with stuff and getting over mm-hmm. it and reinventing. And
well, I think one of the good examples of that, when we moved to Bozeman, back mm-hmm. to Bozeman in 70,
mm-hmm.
There were two older gentlemen on the tennis courts,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of looked like two Mr. Magoos.
Yeah.
They were short, thick glasses, you know, and that funny kind of little hat. But they were pretty good. They were out there almost every day playing tennis. Well, one of them finally he couldn't anymore because he couldn't see the ball coming.
Uh-huh.
So he took up running at 80.
At 80?
At 80.
That's amazing.
And he continued to run until he was 101.
Really?
And he had been a First World War aviator.
Hmm.
And France brought him back about 10, 11 years ago and gave him one of their special medals
mm-hmm.
for what he had done in France. But he was so funny, and he had started going to college as a young man and never had an opportunity to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So he got his Bachelor of Science in Art when he was 96, was it, Carrie? And, you know, this is somebody that you look down there and you think, okay. And the president asked him to come up and just say a few words. Well, picking one of us who's older than 60 and asking us to say a few words. But he got up there, he gave a very nice talk
uh-huh.
to everybody about, you know, staying with it, doing whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And we have a 50-year reunion,
uh-huh.
and all of them get to wear a little gold gown and sit together.
Uh-huh.
And he looked over at them and he grinned and he said, I can hardly wait for my 50th reunion.
This, your husband, Bob, was telling me he wrote an article, and I think this is the same guy he wrote about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And
isn't that amazing, though, you know?
Yeah, and he has still, I think he still holds the world's record in his age group, which, you know, first it was 80, and then it was
mm-hmm,
90.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a fast race. It was how far you could run in an hour is what those races did after, I think, 90.
Well, I hope people your age and my age get some inspiration out of this, but also the younger people
mm-hmm.
or the parents of the younger people that might listen, because we've got a generation of kids. They might have some activity and maybe not, and they're entering life without that base. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult issue. There are a lot of social issues related to that too going on, but.
And I think it's very difficult. You know, when we were little, there were never fences between homes.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, a mile
yeah.
to play hide-and-go-seek or kick the can or some
right.
of the games that we played.
Mm-hmm.
But now people, I don't know if it's just for privacy or security, but there's a fence between every house, so there's nowhere for these children to play hide-and-go-seek
mm-hmm.
because they can't get anywhere.
You know, we moved to Atlanta for 5 years, and we didn't have fences there. And we were freaked out because we're from California where everybody has to have, like, a prison yard, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighbors there in that culture, it's offensive to do that. And it was interesting because we'd be eating dinner, and the neighbor's kids was running through a backyard, and then, you know, they'd be eating dinner, and our kids would run through their backyard.
Yeah.
But it connected people better.
Yes.
It literally didn't put walls up between your neighbors.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. And it freaked my friends out in California when I would tell them, well, you don't have a fence? Well, what about, you know, it's like, we don't need one.
Well, and
you know?
And now we used to go outside after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom would always say, well, be home about 10. So here's the, you know, 15 of us in a 3-block radius, we're out playing hide-and-go-seek or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now children aren't allowed to go out alone
right.
after dark.
Yeah, and especially in the urban areas. You know, if I'm based in Los Angeles, so you've got the whole gang element there. So there are a lot of issues around child obesity. Part of it's technology, part of it's just the safety thing with the drive-bys, sure. depending on where you live.
Yeah.
But hopefully, the bottom line is people have to start doing something.
Yeah.
And we're really at a crossroads in this country. And as a fitness guy, I try to do as much with fitness as I can and you know, just get people moving. I know there's a lot of biochemical things that go on when people put their bodies into motion that work so much better. The research is out on this, too, than the antidepressant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've exercised over 1,500 days in a row without missing a single day.
And I can't say that.
Well, but it doesn't sound, it's not as impressive as it sounds, because a lot of days I just go for a walk. And a lot of the days I didn't want to exercise. Jack Elaine used to say that. He didn't like to exercise. He liked the results that he got from doing it. And he made himself do it. He kicked himself in the butt every morning, literally, and made himself do it. So it's an interesting experiment, because I don't know anything else I've ever done in life or heard about that has a 100% success rate. But for every one of those 1,500 days, I'm glad I did it.
Mm-hmm.
When 2/3 of them, I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Every single time I was done, I was in a better mood. Every single time. And it was light exercise many of the times.
That's hard
it to wasn't
beat.
Like yesterday. And I probably train really hard 1 or 2 days a week. I'll use the kettlebell, or I'll do something like the hike, or I'll mm-hmm. trail run or something. But the other days, I'm just going soft.
Well, my problem is when I get up in the morning, if I don't put on the clothes for either skiing or mm-hmm. running or whatever I do, then I don't do it, you know, because then there's breakfast, and then, well, I'll do it after lunch.
So there's some planning involved, too.
Yeah, I have to do it first thing in the morning, get up, put on the clothes I'm going to exercise in, or I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I don't want to. It's just that, oh, well, maybe later.
You're kind of setting the tone, yeah.
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 Make priorities. You know, I wanted to bring this up because we've asked all of the other older people that we've interviewed this weekend if you would not mind sharing with us whether or not you take any medications.
Oh, I do. I take a baby aspirin every day.
Don't you love it? This has been about what we've encountered with the people that we have interviewed this weekend.
Yeah, not on medications.
They're not on medications at all. I mean, they may take a little Aleve every now and then, or an aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I've been taught that in America, you take a medication for every decade. So if you're 70, you technically, statistically, would be taking 7 meds.
No.
Wow. That's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And there's I've been noticing some things in the research the last year about all the children on medications how that, and so, you know, you have an adult disease when you're a child before you graduate from high school. It's not a good thing. But that's a major point this weekend, too. And I need mm-hmm. to put that into the pages that I'll build for this in the documentation mm-hmm. is that, you know, these people didn't need the medications because they were getting the physical exercise and obviously eating pretty well too. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to do and look like they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you don't need a medication, don't take it. In fact, I think it was it the Harvard Health letter, Carrie, where they say, you know, you really don't even need to take extra vitamin D
mm-hmm.
or daily vitamins or anything because everything is refortified.
Yeah.
If you eat processed food, which Marley does not.
Well,
so she probably needs hers.
Here's the thing.
Well, and I'd like to point out, just excuse me,
yeah.
but I'd like to point out that before she retired, Janet was a nurse.
Right, right. If people got outside once in a while, they wouldn't need all the vitamin D supplements, right? And so that's another thing with technology. You're driven into the computer for these extended periods of time, and then you're home, you know, on the Game Boy or, mm-hmm. you know, the Xbox, and so we have a lot of interesting issues. And keeping it simple, the lean brace, you know, just getting out and moving around a little bit could be a pretty good mm-hmm. solution, or at least one of the solutions.
Absolutely.
So you guys have anything else you want to add before we
sign
off?
Marley is training now to go.
Oh, yeah, what's next?
Rim to rim.
What's next?
And so she said to me the other day, she said, well, you know, I probably need to do at least an 18-miler.
That's the Grand Canyon. So down one side, up through the bottom, and up to the other side,
that's
rim
what
to
she's
rim.
Doing. So I said, well, I'll go with you, but I have to do what Carrie lets me do. In the summer when I go with Carrie, we reach a certain point where I'm thinking, okay, enough's enough. So she goes and runs another 45 minutes up the mountain with the dogs and picks me up on the way back. And so I'll go with Marley if she won't make me go the whole way if I can't.
Well, and she's talking about still training. But then this became something that she said, oh, well, I don't think I can ever do the Grand Canyon. And I said, well, do you think maybe you could hike down and spend the night and hike back up? Because that'd be rim to rim.
And I said yes, and Carrie's going to go too.
Yeah. So maybe next year we've got a, you know, a rim to rim.
I think
Janet style in mind.
I'm going to send Candace out, my wife.
Oh, good, because Carrie's going to come too.
Yeah, yeah. I told her she was she led a hike, a corporate hike for me yesterday, so I could come here. And so she's... I want to meet these ladies.
Because you know what? It's not a matter of whether or not you can do it. It's figuring out how it is you can.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's a good note to end on.
Well, one other thing that I've also noticed through the years is that for some people to stay in shape and get into shape, they need to set a goal, like a race or an accomplishment that they have their eyes set on. And I think that's really important, just to set a goal. Like, okay, by next month I want to do this, and in a year I want to be able to do this, and then you work towards that goal. And I think that really helps people stay with the program.
Yeah, they're just they're not directed, you know, so they need some kind of way to point that energy.
Right, they get bored.
Yeah, I've noticed that. That's been hard after a competition, is just like, you know, I'm kind of training to stay fit, but, you know, it wasn't like when I was competing nationally, internationally, where I was so focused for a year on each of the big events that I would do. And so when I got certified with the kettlebells, that was great because it really snapped me out of that funk. I was still active, but it's just not the same unless you're really zeroed in and you're focused and you're moving towards that goal. And even the hike this weekend, I had to kind of gear up some cardio that, you know, I wasn't maybe tapping into as much as I should have been. Obviously, I need to do more to keep up with Janet.
That's right. I just wanted to say one last thing, and that was that there was a thread that ran through all the interviews also, Ron, that you found with Chuck Giles, who was the cyclist that we interviewed, who's ridden across six continents on his bike. You also had a person who would then go and spend many, many hours and lots of resources volunteering a lot of times to do SAG for people who were doing the Race Across America.
Right.
And when we talked to Roger Bivens and his wife Karen, who are in their late 60s and compete in Ironman distance triathlons, you had in Roger, who was ex-military, retired military, a person who was putting together a program to help veterans, and you had in his wife a woman who began running by doing the team and training for leukemia. And then you had Janet, who, when she organized the ski patrol where she lived and would do search and rescue in the area where she lived. So you have a theme here that also runs through people who remain physically active as being also people who give back to their community. And I wanted to point that out because that and no meds, you know, it makes for a pretty dynamic person when you get to be older, that you've accomplished things, you've given back to your community, you're healthy, and you're still doing it, and you're going to do it till the day you die.
An older term people used to talk about was vitality.
Yes.
You know, and it that's something I got this weekend is these people had a vitality, they're a vigorous kind of energy. You know, not just physical, but mentally too. So,
as my friend says, they were juicy.
They had the chi.
Yeah.
Well, it's really been great being in Tucson, and we'll come back. I'll make sure Candace gets over here to do some hiking
Good.
With you guys.
Yes.
And the thing next year, Grand
in
Canyon
March.
Sounds kind of cool. Yeah, I'll do SAG.
We'll put you on one of those mules.
Yeah, I'll be the Sherpa.
Yeah. I'll loan you my broom.
I was going to say, how about the whisk broom?
But it was really fun. We met some great people, had a nice little party. afterwards. And I know I'll go home, you know, really thankful for the people that I met this weekend and the friends that I have now. So thanks for joining us on the Lean Berets. And I know you'll stay fit, so we'll be hearing about all that in the future. You've been listening to the Lean Berets radio show at theleanberets.com. Supercharged rockabilly today provided by Hot Rod Walt and the Psycho DeVilles from Atlanta. Until next time, keep your foot on the accelerator for health and rock on.